Okay, my name is Hari Sridhar. Today is the 27th of June and the time is 9:05 a.m. And I'm going to be interviewing Dr. Vidya Atreya today. And this interview forms part of a series of interviews I'm doing with conservation scientists in India, looking at the intersection of science with conservation policy and conservation decision making. So Vidya, thank you so much for agreeing to do this. I'd like to, start and in today's conversation, I'd like to sort of go chronologically to really ask you about your, early childhood years and the formative influences leading up to you deciding to do or take up a career in conservation. So I'd like to start right at the beginning. You know, can you tell us where you were born and, where you spent most of your childhood?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for wanting to hear my point of view. So I was born in Mangalore, coastal Karnataka, because my mom's native place was Mangalore. And I grew up in Bombay. So, and I spent all my childhood, and I lived in Bombay till I was 21 years old.
Okay.
Yeah.
And at what point did you move to Bombay?
No, we lived in Bombay just for the delivery. My mom went to her mom's house.
Okay.
Yeah.
And can you also tell us a little bit about, the kind of house you grew up in Bombay? And I'm interested in this in the context of, what kind of access you had to nature and wildlife in the place where you were living.
Right. So I guess I lived in a little row house, which was a luxury, I guess, in Bombay at that time. And but I think where I lived was not as important as the people around me, because both my mom and dad really liked animals a lot, especially my mom. She like so much so that she used to not even kill the cockroaches in our house, because even I would attempt to kill it, like not when I was young, but when, she was much older and I would visit her because she would like, no. So she was very, very, very empathetic towards animals, and she really loved cats. So we always had an average of 5-6 cats in our house all the time. Yeah. And another memory is we lived in like this one bedroom flat in Chembur, and my dad used to work in a factory, and I think a bulbul had fallen off from its nest or something, and he had got it home. So that bulbul used to live in our house, and it was like free. Like it wasn't caged, and it would sleep on top of the fridge. There was a little toy, I remember. And, it would come and sit on my aunt's fingers and, I think get the food from under the nails. And so that's like one of my first memories of that bulbul in that small little house. And then we moved to the row house where we had a lot of cats and there were a lot of birds, and, the cats were predominant. Like my mom really, really loved cats. And also my whole family, like extended family, I think more than Bombay, we used to spend like 2 months a year in Mangalore in my grandparents' house, which was like this really large, I think maybe more than an acre. I don't know how big it was. Now it seems more like more than an acre, with trees and mango trees. And, there were cats and there were dogs and there were birds. So there was always, a lot of animals were quite a part of my growing life, I guess, in the mind space and in real space.
Okay.
Yeah.
And do you have siblings?
Yeah, but she came only 11 years later. So I was 11 when she was born. So she was pretty much like, I was almost a teenager when she arrived. So our, relationship only grew when she became 18, 19 and I could converse with an adult, because I was way older than her.
Okay.
Yeah, so initially while I was growing up, I was a single kid, but with a lot of friends. So,
And did your mother also work outside the house? Did she have a job?
No, she didn't. So she's one of these sad cases where she really wanted to become a doctor, but her dad didn't allow her. And then my dad didn't allow her. So, she's probably one of the brightest women I've met. in my life, but she couldn't do what she wanted to do. So,
okay.
Yeah. She was a housewife. Yeah.
Okay. And can you tell us a little bit about the schools you went to? What?
Yeah.
Were you in the same school throughout your education?
Yeah, I was in the same school. It was a convent nearest our place, St. Anthony's High School. Okay. And I really like it in retrospect. It was a girls' school. So mm-hmm. that part I don't like because I believe kids should mingle with, you know, everybody, you know, different sex, mm-hmm. different social, you know, hierarchies, everything. So that way it was really nice because all kinds of people were there in that school. You know, mm-hmm. rich kids, poor kids, medium kids, like mm-hmm. everybody. And, you know, so I think that I liked it. And it was, those days in Bombay were really nice. Like I went to the 8th, I used to go cycling to mm-hmm. school. And that, I really used to enjoy doing that. And 1 year I was in a boarding in Bangalore in the 8th. Yeah. Okay. But I didn't like it at all. So I went back in the 9th.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing this was an English medium school?
Yeah, it was an English medium school.
Okay. And so you continued in this school right up to the 12th
No, standard. It had only till 10th. Okay. And then 11th, I went to a college, SIES. And I went, 11th and 12th, I did in a, you know, nearby college. And then my graduation, I did in another college in Bombay.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So I'll come back to the 11th and 12th and your graduation. But I just wanted to ask you a little more about your school itself. In school, do you remember if there were, you know, opportunities to engage with nature? You know, for example, were you part of nature clubs? Were there trips school took?
No. Okay. None at all. There was absolutely no opportunity that I was, but I like vividly remember one day when I went to school, it was a rainy season. I must have been in the 6th or something. Uh-huh. And when we came back, I had to walk a distance to go to the bus stop. And there was this garbage mound and there were like these 3 puppies there. Mm-hmm. And it was raining. And I picked up all the 3 pups and I took them in the bus home. And like, you know, and my dad was aghast when he came back from office and he was like, no way, the mom is probably somewhere there. And like we drove in the night and it was raining and left them back there. So, so I think a lot of this thing to animals, I don't think I got it from peers as much as I got it from family. Like if you ask mm-hmm. me to think about it, yeah.
Right. Okay. And like outside of school with the family, do you remember if you made trips to say forests? Do you remember when was the first time you visited a forest or a wildlife sanctuary?
Of course. See, that time, forest was not a place for us to go. I don't think safaris and all had started back then. Okay. So I remember the very first trip of mine actually was Ruya College had a nature club. Mm-hmm. And I joined that nature club and not because of any particular love of nature or something. It was just something to do. Like I liked animals and all, but wildlife and all still wasn't in my, you know, in my arena or whatever. So as part of the nature club, we went to Annamalai Tiger Reserve for a camp. And I think that is where I really, like from a hip Bombay girl, right, you know, I knew that this is what I want to do. Like Karian Shola was my first wildlife place and it still has a very special place in my head. Yeah.
Do you remember in which year this was? Which year of
your
school?
It was 1988. Oh, God. No, 1986. I don't remember, actually. 1987, maybe, or 86?
It should be early. 87 is, I mean, from your CV, in your CV, you say 87 is when you graduated, meaning you finished your undergrad.
So 88 then, I think.
So this was during your college?
Yeah, it was in my first or second year of college in Ruya that we went to Topslip for a nature camp.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, I misunderstood. I thought you joined the nature club in Ruya College when you were in school. Sorry.
No, this was in second or first year of college.
Okay.
not right. of 11th 12th. 11th 12th was an SIES, and then first year, second year, third year graduation.
And what about you know, zoos? Do you remember visiting zoos during your growing up years?
No, not particularly.
Okay.
And we come from a, you know, I work for an organization which has, I think, the first zoo in the world, the WCS. But we come from a family where we, you know, don't like to see animals held captive, although we love to eat fish. But yeah, so
So you said your parents and your extended family were always interested in animals. Were they also interested in, you know, wildlife?
No, I don't think. See, the thing I'm realizing now is that we as biologists, no, separate wildlife and domestic animals. But for a normal family which is not tuned into wildlife, there's not much difference between domestic animals and wild animals. They're all animals, right? So it was just, you know, I remember the call of the magpie robin in my grandfather's house when I would be sleeping, and I would see the kingfishers and I would see the mongoose, and we would talk about the civet cats that came inside the house. But they were not like, what, they were like just like the cats we liked and the dogs that were there, you know. So there was no distinction till I guess I joined the nature club.
Yeah, I guess if you have the opportunity in your house itself to see both wild and domestic animals, you don't really make that distinction so much, which that's an opportunity that most people don't have today. And I also wanted to ask you about, you know, reading. Do you remember if you were reading a lot when you during your growing up years outside of your school?
Yeah, I used to read a lot, but not about wildlife. So the thing is, once I went to Top Slip, no, in whatever that year was, 87, 88, I just became a total wildlife freak. Like, I used to go to Sanjay Gandhi National Park every Sunday. I used to go to BNHS every Saturday, and I used to sit with their collections, and I would only, like, you know, read National Geographic, and I would watch, you know, everything. Like, I became this wildlife person after that. So, but before that, it was just like cats at home and, you know, the birds at home and stuff like that. And I had wanted to become a veterinary doctor, but I couldn't handle, I still can't handle, like, the you know, doing anything to the animal. So, and then I didn't have many opportunities as well. I didn't have knowledge of many opportunities. And my parents were insistent that I take science, just because science is, you know, better than arts. So in my rebellious teenager days, I said, no, I'm going to take arts because you'll want me to take science. Although I love science more than I did arts. So I took arts, and then I realized I don't like arts. So 11th and 12th, I did my, like, arts and psychology. I also had, I think, statistics and mathematics. There was an option. And then my BA, I did it in maths because I realized I really like maths. So that college had an option of doing all six papers in maths, and that's what I did.
So this was in your you said a BA, was it?
Yeah, it was a BA in maths because I had already taken in 11th, 12th arts. There was no way I could change back to science, you know, once I had taken. But then I realized that I don't very much enjoy, like, you know, psychology and stuff. And I really like the math I was doing. I think I had some maths. And then this one college had an option where I could have taken all six papers, maths, for the final year, which I did.
And that was Ruiya. And you said you also were at some point interested in becoming a vet. Was that after you went to Animalize?
No, that was before only. Like, just what work do you do to work with animals, veterinary doctor, right?
So you said, I mean, the reason you didn't take it up is because you weren't comfortable with the idea of actually handling animals. But now in your life as a conservation biologist,
it's not the handling, it's the, like, cut, like, you're actually harming them, right? When you're doing something, that part. I guess I'm just a wuss somewhere in the core.
And during your school years, do you know what were the subjects that you were really interested in as you're growing up?
Yeah, it was science and mathematics. I actually love math because there was this really good teacher we got, I think, in the ninth standard. So after that, I really, really used to enjoy doing mathematics. And I did really well in science and maths in the 10th. And then I went and took arts. Yeah.
So, one of the things that I'm interested in understanding in these interviews is also about, getting into a career in conservation is often only possible for people who are relatively stable financially. So, one of the things I'm interested in is the kind of financial backgrounds that people in conservation come
Right,
from.
right.
So now looking back, do you think that you had a reasonably comfortable, stable life during your growing up years?
Yeah, definitely. Like there were no, I mean, we were not rich, but we were not like we were at the thought of no money never came in our head for sure. Yeah.
So the first sort of career choice you had to make was in the 11th standard when you chose to do arts, right? And then immediately after your 11th and 12th, you chose to do a BA in mathematics. And it was during this period that you visited a wildlife sanctuary for the first time and realized that you really like that kind of work. So what were the sort of thoughts going through your head as you were finishing your BA? What were the different kinds of possibilities that you were considering?
So I wanted to do an MA in maths, which I did enroll for in Bombay University, but at the same time, I wanted to get married to this person that I wanted to get married, and my parents were very much against it. So there was this other personal aspect happening. So that I think took the that made me that was the thing that made me decide what to do. It was not as much the career as this personal issue that was happening, with parents and stuff. So then I got married actually in 89 when I was really young, 21 years. Yeah. And so my Ramana was really very, very supportive of, he's a naturalist and wildlifer too. So it was really nice because he was very supportive. But I was still clueless because I couldn't, with my BA, I couldn't get anywhere, for a master's program in wildlife, for instance. I think WII had it. And then what happened was we went for a holiday to Kedarnath Wildlife Sanctuary, Ramana and I, holiday in the sense, went trekking and stuff. And we met Satya Kumar, who's now a senior faculty in Wildlife Institute of India. He was doing his PhD research there. And we, just, he was kind enough to just let us, stay at his field station and he fed us and stuff. And then one day he came with us and I was telling him, yeah, that I really want to do, but I don't know. Because I have, then he said, oh, this Salim Ali School in Pondicherry allows art students, which I didn't know. So I applied there and I got in there. And that was where I started, like I could get into this field like legitimately.
So this would have been the years 89 to 91, is that correct? Because
No, 91. I started my master's there in 91.
you started the master's there.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just misreading what you've written on your CV. In your CV you say MS in 91, that's the starting date. And similarly the BS in 87 is again the starting date, the bachelor's
No,
BA.
no, no, no. I guess I've written it wrong. 87, yeah, it'll be the starting date, I guess. Oh, I don't know. I'll have to check and
Okay,
get
that's
back
fine.
to you. It's like so long ago.
Yeah, because in the CV it says 1987 BA Math, 1991 MS Ecology, and then
91, yeah.
the PhD you say 2012, which I think is the finishing date.
Yeah, that's when I got awarded the PhD. I thought I started my master's in 91. I'll check and get back to you. Oh, shit. I mean, like passing the CV around everywhere. Yeah.
So you, I mean, irrespective of what the dates are, you took there was a break between your
Correct.
finishing your BSc and starting your master's.
Yeah.
That's right.
Finishing my BA and starting my master's.
BA, sorry, I keep saying BSc because it's mathematics, it's a BA.
I think
And
88 I finished my BA and 91 I started my master's.
okay.
That, vaguely, that's what I remember. Yeah.
Okay. So can you tell us a little about the master's itself? What were your experiences in that course, and what do you recollect was, did you enjoy doing that course?
So it was the first time I was kind of away from home, you know. So that was interesting, and it was Pondicherry, which was a very interesting place. The school was, it was like one strange, I can write a book about that school, because when I was there, it was, it had all these faculty who were at each other's throats, and there was so much drama among them, and it was very bizarre. Like one day one faculty like just started crying, you know, and but I the what I took away with was, they were like really nice exposure to other people. Like there were I think 6, 7, 8 people in our batch. So it was very different people from different backgrounds. And then I did my thesis with Dr. Priya Davidar. And I think that, and she took this course for us, I remember, on writing, on reviewing scientific literature. And that has really stuck in my head. And I think it in some way it also laid a lot of foundation for the way I think, because I think in that course she really taught us to be so critical of what we read, you know, so much so that we would be, so what we would do is we, I think she made us, like one person will read a paper, I mean everybody will read the paper, and one person will present the paper, and everybody else has to critique that presentation. We were shit scared of the others, you know, because we were just going, and that time it was not so sweet and nice as people are today, you know. You can really, like, you would go for each other that time. So that time I remember that, you know, what you read, you don't have to, like, earlier we used to think of it as a gospel truth, right? Oh my God, a scientific paper and all. She really taught us to shred it to pieces, which was great, because then later, when you're dealing with what experts tell you or somebody tells you, you're still very, very critical of what they're saying. And I believe science should be like that. You can't accept what others are saying just because it's published or just because they're these great people. I mean, I guess at some level, I've always been very irreverent. I guess because I used to fight a lot with my dad. He used to expect me to be very obedient and nice, which I never was. So there it started, the route of dissent. And then I lived in Bombay, which really helped me, you know, say what I wanted to say as a woman and, you know, as a... so, and then this Priya Davidar's course. And then she was my master's advisor. And she was great, because she was very hands off, but when you needed advice, she would give the right advice. So it was, I think her being there made a big difference to me, because she was also a woman and in a very, very chauvinistic male dominated world, you know. So it was a lot of lessons learned, I think, there.
And in your batch itself, was it both? I mean, was it a mix of both men and women? Were there other women other apart from you in the batch?
Yeah, there were two other women in the batch, and I think there were four or five guys. So it was interesting, because all of us three women were from cities.
Okay.
And many of the guys were not from the cities. And I believe, like, even today when I, like, you know, even many organize, like, even Wildlife Institute of India or something, like, I was there till 96 or 95. And see, most of us women who have come to this field, especially my generation, I think it's easier now. I had to fight to be in this field. I had to fight my family, although they liked animals and all. They were like, what is this, wild animals? You know, they'll come and attack you and stuff. And this is not what... And going alone to places, you know, traveling alone at that age, like, you know, when you're 23, 24. So we women who have come to this field have always been fighters. But many of the guys who have come into this field, I don't know, I'm not talking about this generation where the exposure is much more and you know what you want to do much before, you know. But at that generation, most of the guys who came to this field came because they didn't, I think they didn't get into medicine or engineering. Medicine, biology they've taken, and there was this opportunity, and then they got in. So, you know, except for a few who really wanted to do wildlife, so then you have a difference in mindset. You know, you have these women who are much more strong-headed, who are much more liberal, who will fight for what they want. And then you have guys who are just doing it because they're part of the flow. You know, that's... So the mindsets then, there's a terrible mismatch between the two. You know, and then they have urban girls, and then you have people who are not from urban areas watching these girls who are urban girls. You know, so you have to, you know, you have to deal with all that shit when you're there.
Right. Okay. So these, the, your classmates during your masters, are these people you have continued to stay in touch with?
No, I'm a very asocial person. So I don't stay in touch with people like that, but it's not that because I, you know, they're not there in my mind. It's just I am like that. I'm a bit of a solitude liking person.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So earlier you said that, you know, your parents wanted you to get into science in your 11th standard, and you did arts instead. So at the point when you decided to do the master's in Pondicherry, what was the reaction?
No, so now I was out of the influence of my parents, right? Because I was married. So, yeah, so I didn't have to ask anybody or do anything then. And Ramana was pretty much of, like, he was very, very supportive of this career choice. Although I had to live, I mean, we pretty much lived apart for a long, because after 2 years in Pondicherry, I was 3 years in Wildlife Institute of India. Then he went abroad for his postdoc, and I went abroad to a different country for my, you know, PhD, but I didn't do a PhD there. I did another master. So we stayed apart for nearly a decade after that. Like, each of us, just because we got married so early, each of us were studying as well. So he was very supportive throughout. So I didn't have a, I didn't have to fight anymore.
Right. And after your marriage, did you continue to live in Bombay?
No, no. After my marriage, I moved to Bangalore. That is where he lived. So we lived there for a year. And then he had a work in Ooty. So we went to Ooty for 6 months. And there, and after that, we were in Pune, where he was doing his PhD.
And what is Ramana's line of work?
So he's primarily a physicist. And astrophysics is what he did his PhD in. But he now works in ICER, Indian Institute of Science, Education and Research, with part position in biology and physics, because he's a naturalist. He's a very good bird watcher. And he also discovered this new bird in Arunachal. So he has a project, research project. So he's a naturalist plus astrophysicist.
So I want to ask you, so, you know, through your childhood years, there was this interest, this curiosity in animals, and then finally leading up to you doing a master's at Pondicherry. During this time, you know, was conservation part of your thinking at all, or was it mainly curiosity and interest in understanding these animals? Do you remember when questions or an interest in conservation, protecting these animals first came?
Yeah, that was much later, because I was a hardcore biologist, naturalist to start out with. I was studying. So, but one thread that has been common throughout is I've always been interested in interactions. Like, even then, like for my Pondicherry thesis, I did my work. Like, there was a small project I remember that we had to do, and I did it on these spiders that live on these Jatropha plants. Yes. So, and it was fascinating. And then I did my actual thesis on two topics. One was frugivory at stranglerfigs, and the other was the host preference of stranglerfigs. For which trees do they have a preference for? So it is very, you know, hardcore ecology, looking only ecology of wild species. So that was what it is. And then there was no interest. I mean, of course, I, you know, I would have wanted to save the forest, and I would have wanted to save any little animal. And it was not just, I mean, I remember finding one crow that was injured, and I took it to my friend's mom, who used to take care of animals, asking her if she can. So it was not, it was any animal would have been worthy of attention, not just wild. Yeah. And then after that, I was offered by Dr. Ravi Chellam to have this research assistant position in the survey he was doing to find an alternate home for the lions, you know. And he, Dr. Satya knew that I was really interested in cats. So he had told me, and so I went on. So for 2 years, I worked on that in Wildlife Institute of India. That was just survey. And then 6 months, I did a survey of a clouded leopard in Northeast India when I was in Wildlife Institute of India. And I'd hoped to do my PhD there, but I didn't find the atmosphere very conducive. Like, yeah, I found it very chauvinistic, very, very chauvinistic, in fact. So much so that I pretty much fought with most people I was working with, and I left. So, still no thought of conservation, yeah. So, but it was much later. So I don't know where you, I'll have to tell you my history to come to the conservation part. So,
okay. So, so it, you're saying it came much later. Till this point, there was no thought, or it wasn't one of the main things you're thinking about when you're thinking of animals.
It wasn't anything I was thinking of.
Okay.
So, and yeah, I think a lot of wildlife biologists do that. Like, they only look at the animal or the species they're working with. And that is all. I mean, it's fine if you're doing that, right? Because for the sake of research, you want to do only that. That's okay. But then the same people will go on in their proposals to write about the conservation implication of their work, which I think is not fair.
So I just want to follow up on a few things before coming to, you know, your interest in conservation, which came later on. So do you remember how you chose your master's project? Was this just something, an ongoing research interest of your supervisor that you decided to follow up on?
No. So the thing was that when I'd gone to Topslip, I had seen these strangler figs. Like, these strangler figs are these hemiepiphytes. They belong to a separate subgenus of the fig. And they start out life growing on another tree. Okay, so when I used to walk in Karian Shola, I used to see these trees on other trees, and then they form, many times they become so large that the internal, just 1 minute, I think. Courier has come. So it was just fascinating to see. So what happens is that they encircle the host tree with their roots, and many times the host tree dies because of, you know, these trees shade them out, and they finish, like, they access the nutrients in the ground. And then you have this intertwined roots with a hollow inside. Oh God, 1 minute, Still somebody. Is it Atreya? Atreya? Hello? I think it's for somebody else. Okay. So, yeah, so I wanted to study them. So it was kind of my idea to study them. And Priya was a person who was dealing in plant-animal interactions. That was her specialty. So that's why I did the frugivory study, looking at the birds that come to eat at these fig trees. But I also wanted to study the host preference of these triangular figs. So it was my idea,
Right. And you also came back to this idea, to working on this later, did you? During your master's abroad as well?
Because what happened was I went to WIA to do a PhD, but I was really not enjoying working there. I didn't like the work atmosphere. So I applied abroad for a PhD position, and I had I think I'd already published a paper with of my master's work. And that was much easier to get. And I was as fascinated by these triangular figs as I am with cats, you know. So I'd applied, and I got a good my tuition was waived and I got a good stipend. So, and this person who I got, whose lab I got into, he was studying Stangler figs in Panama.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a really good deal, and I took, and it was for a PhD. So I took up the opportunity there.
Okay.
But yeah.
Go on.
But having done that, I went to the US. I was there for 2 years, and it was in this place called Iowa.
Uh-huh.
So I didn't like the US much at all. Again, so I just got away with a master's. Like I had done some fieldwork in Panama.
Mm-hmm.
And I used that. That was again looking at the strangler figs over there. So I got away with another master's. Yeah.
Okay. And do you what was the name of the person you were working with in the US?
Yeah, he is Dr. John Nason.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
And did you apply to? I mean, why Iowa? Did you? Was there a particular reason why you went to Iowa?
I looked at some 3-4 people who were working on figs, Stangler figs and stuff. And this guy had a opening, and he had, the university was giving me a really good deal. Like they had waived my tuition, which was not happening anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he had just, I think, published a paper in Nature on the figs. So he was this upcoming young faculty. And they were opening up the department. So it was a really good deal because I couldn't have afforded paying for anything to go there. Yeah.
Right. Okay. And so I want to go back to your time at WII. So this was immediately after your, was it immediately after your master's at Pondicherry?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Okay. And you said that Dr. Satyakumar knew about your interest in cats. What was this? I mean, you mean your interest in, you know, you're keeping cats at home, was there also some exposure to, you know, wild cats, wild carnivores at this time, or was it just an interest?
No, it was just an interest, and I guess cats have been a species that I've always had around me, like, and it's crazy, like my mom would come and, you know, she would shoo away the cats because she'll say you're just sitting and playing with them and not studying. So I would have them around 24/7. Like even when I went for a bath, I would take my music system and my cat. And she would be sitting there. So it was a species. And I don't think domestic cats are so very different from the wild cats, you know, and in the way they are, because unlike other domestic animals, the cats are pretty wild, like they don't rely on us at all. They don't need to rely on us for food or shelter, right? They can hunt and stuff. So I don't think they're very different. And they just fascinate me. So he knew about that. Like after my master's in Pondicherry, I had told a lot of people that I want to work on large cats. And I really wanted to work on the clouded leopard. In the Northeast. So which is why I did that survey, because I was hoping I'll do a PhD on that once I do the survey. So that was the plan.
Right. But you didn't enjoy being in WI, and that's why you went abroad.
I couldn't work there as a junior scientist. So I was like, and I guess if you look back, pretty much all my life I've done what I wanted. I made mistakes and stuff, but, you know, I think that's all part of life.
And I mean, your discomfort with WI, was it at that point in time, was WI also, you know, mainly, I mean, were the people there mostly men in the institute itself?
Yeah, but there were a lot of nice guys also. I'm not saying no. Like, there were a lot of faculty who were nice, but the people, I guess I was very disillusioned with the people that I worked with. Like, I mean, how to say this in a nice diplomatic way? So, I think what I would say is that the chauvinism ran really, really deep. And I mean, I've never felt chauvinism while I was in Bombay, you know. because Bombay is a really special place like that. Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, there will be, but, you know, if you don't like something and you say, you know, that other people will come to your help over there, mm-hmm. in Bombay. It's mm-hmm. an amazing, at least when I was growing up, I really, really, I think 90% of what I am is also because of Bombay.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then coming to this place where people come from very, very deeply patriarchal backgrounds, no?
Mm-hmm.
And then seeing very senior professors, you know, being so small-minded. I mean, mm-hmm. maybe I am just, you know, maybe I'm wrong, which is also fine. But it didn't gel with me at all, because I work very equally and I have ethics and I,
mm-hmm.
You know, there is certain professional, which I think US really helped me a lot, because even though you call your, you know, your PhD guide by his first name, there's very, very professional behavior. Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, in the US, they also have issues, you know, but I think here in India, the professional and personal get really intermingled, even today, like I find. Mm-hmm. And I am not for that. I believe that if you have a professional relationship with somebody, you maintain that professionality.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important for the nature of the work, then mm-hmm. outcome of the work. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you didn't enjoy the culture in the institute, the work culture in the institute, but what do you remember about, you know, the...
One minute. So I will not make such a generalized statement. I will say that I did not enjoy working with the people I had to work with closely. Okay. Yeah, okay. Because there were a lot of other good people there.
Sure.
But, you know, just that my what I wanted to work on didn't... you know, the people I was working with,
mm-hmm.
Some of them, many of them, mm-hmm. I didn't enjoy at all working with them.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
What about the field work itself that you were doing then? What memories do you have of that? Both in the,
yeah.
So did you work in Kuno? You said you were involved in the relocation
project.
Yeah.
So for that, we a team of us, three of us, we had Ravi Shalam was in charge, but mm-hmm. He came only sometime for the field work. But majority of the time, it was three of us: Christy, me, and Justice Joshua,
mm-hmm.
in like this open jeep in the summer of you know, those central India,
mm-hmm.
Going from three sites, I think. Kuno Palpur was one, mm-hmm. I think Sita Mata was another, and another place. Now mm-hmm. I'll have to think about it. But mm-hmm. we were driving to do faunal and floral surveys to see if the site is okay for the reintroduction of the lion. So mm-hmm. that was a really, like I enjoyed the tour, but the temperatures was killing. It was just too hot mm-hmm. for me, and it was an open mm-hmm. you know, so it was not an enjoyable trip at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the most junior of that team as well. But after that, I did this clouded leopard survey, which was an independent, only I was, mm-hmm. You know, doing it. And it was pretty hard because I had like 110 kilos of equipment alone going from, you know, Delhi to Guwahati. And that time there was insurgency over there mm-hmm. in Assam.
Mm-hmm.
So doing that and then going to Arunachal, which everybody till I hit the Arunachal border was like, are you crazy? I mean, not mm-hmm. my colleagues, but public, like, you know, the taxi guy who took me from Assam to Arunachal, like, are you crazy? Those people are violent, mm-hmm. you know, this, that and the other. And to go there and find the most beautiful place I've ever mm-hmm. been to. Mm-hmm. And even people. So that I really, really liked, because I did some things that were totally crazy, met some people mm-hmm. who were amazing. And that was a trip I will never, ever forget.
Mm-hmm. Was this yeah. your first time in the Northeast?
Yeah, it was my very first time in the Northeast. And I stayed in Arunachal. So I did like this spectacular walk from the corner of Burma through Namdafa Tiger Reserve, which was some 150 kilometers maybe
uh-huh,
or something.
Wow.
Yeah, in 10 days or something like that. I now don't, with a couple of tribals, which is just mm-hmm. amazing. Like it, you know, I could, you know, that is a trip that I, and then I went to Meghalaya. I went to the western side of Arunachal, but I just Namdafa just, you know, was this place that I went back to again. And I didn't see many clouded leopards. I saw a lot more of their, like, you know, their canines and all, which I used, which have, you know, cultural meaning. I saw a pet in Meghalaya. And I saw a skin on a wall in Western Arunachal. But the entire experience, and I was all alone, right? So, like, you know, managing it and stuff was, it was an experience, like total experience. Like, I really enjoyed it.
Okay. So at this point, you know, after having worked for your master's, was your master's in Karian Chola?
Yeah, it was.
Okay. So after having done fieldwork in Karian Chola and in Kuno and here, did you enjoy, you know, being in the field for long periods of time doing fieldwork?
Absolutely. That's why do you think I have this thing for solitude? I totally enjoyed it, and more than that, like meeting the people who live there, like the rural, like the tribals. You know, the tribals, and I didn't, in the Kuno thing, we didn't get to meet any local people, but in Annamalai and in Arunachal, I got to meet a lot of the local people, and I think that also gave me a very different perspective into how they are and stuff, and I have like made relationships which are there even today, even though I'm a social person.
Okay, right. And you know, so you went after this, you went to the US and attempted to start a PhD on figs again. I was wondering, did you consider going to the US and doing a PhD on cats, you know, trying to find a way to do a PhD on clouded leopards in an American university?
Because I was told that, you know, see, the thing is, professionally, my CV was much more stronger. I had published a paper on the Stanglophages. You know, I could ask for a good recommendation from Priya. I didn't want to ask favors from any of the people I worked with in WII. So it was just a better idea. And it, you know, I really liked the Stanglophages. So it didn't matter. It was just a much more stronger application if I use the figs rather than the cats. Cats are a terribly contested world. It's so hard to get to work on large cats, especially then. And more so if you're a woman. So, and more so if you don't have any sugar daddy hanging over your head. Yeah, so it would have, I wouldn't have got anywhere if I had. I tried after. Did I try before or after? I don't remember. I tried for a bit to get some, I don't remember when it was. I think before. Before I tried to work on large cats in like other countries and stuff. But it is just so hard, man. It's not easy at all because the people you're dealing with are all alpha males, you know. Yeah, and it's and just this woman, random woman coming in, kid coming in saying they want to work. So, yeah.
So when you say you tried, you mean you tried applying for positions in other countries to work on cats?
Yeah, on clouded leopard in other countries which had clouded leopard. I think I tried one or two. I didn't try, like, I tried that, but that's it. I was like, okay, this is not going to work. And I think other people told me that I, you know, the senior, like the more, I think Priya and other people also told me that, you know, publication really helps and, you know, this way, this is a good option. And I love the figs as well. And they took me, like, I worked in Panama. I worked, I did field work there for 6 months at the Smithsonian Tropical Research Institute. And I had such a great time. I got a license for driving a boat in the canal. And I would every day, you know, be driving out in the canal and got to meet all these amazing people and the both Panamanians and other people at the at STRI, which is a very, very prestigious institution, the Baru, Colorado Island. So I was living there for 6 months. So it was a fantastic experience. Anyway, and I don't regret it at all.
And was this the first time you were going out of the country?
Yeah, it was the very first time I was leaving the country at 29.
And so if you don't mind me asking, you said you didn't stay on to finish a PhD, you came away with a master's. Can you tell us a little bit about why that was? Was it just that you didn't like living in the US?
Yeah, so that by then my husband was living in South America on a postdoc. He was there, and we had already stayed apart some 10 years or so. And then the US, I really had a very hard time dealing with the US. And you know, there is always an underlying level of racism. I guess if I was maybe in California or New York, it would have been different. That's what people tell me. But I was in this heartland, you know, Iowa. And it was a very, and I think at some level I really miss the chaos and the humanity that is there in India. Although again, I'm saying I'm antisocial, but you're still constantly dealing with people, right? Every day. And there you can go for days without interacting with, you know, anybody else. You know, just so it was, I really didn't enjoy it, and there's no way I was going to be living there for the rest of my life. So, and that time, my professor, he shifted universities, and he was going to the same state, just another university. So, I had a choice then to make whether I want to stay or I want to go. He asked us, you know, all the people in his lab, what. So, then I had a choice. So I said, no, I will rather just use my data, get a master's, and I will go. So I went and I joined my husband back in Chile. So, which was a much better option than going to the same state, another university, you know.
And do you remember which year you came back to India?
Yeah, so I went to Chile and then we were there for 3 years. I had my daughter there. So in 2001, we came back to India, and that too, we went to the rural area near Pune. Where which is 75 kilometers from Pune, where there's a radio telescope, and my husband did his PhD there, but he came back as a faculty there. So we decided we'll go stay in the rural landscape because our kid is small and you know, try it out and stuff. So 2001, I came back.
2001. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, 2002. 2001, my daughter was born. 2002, I came back.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when you were in Chile, were you doing work of any sort?
No, no, no.
Okay.
I didn't. I tried a little bit to talk to the people working on the Andean cat. Yeah, but again, they were not very, like, it was not very positive. So I was like, whatever. And then I had my daughter. So then I didn't have time. And consciously, after I had my daughter, I decided that till she, first 5 years, I will not work.
Okay.
So that happened then.
And so 2002, when you came back, what's the name of the place where you decided to live?
It's called Junnar.
Junnar. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. And do you have other children? Is
No,
or just
only
one
one
daughter?
daughter.
Okay. Right. So 2000, and you know, from reading other stuff you've written, and I think watching and other interview, this was also around the time, like 2003 was around the time when you started getting interested in leopards. So can you tell us a little about that? You were living in the area,
Correct.
so can you tell us how
So
that
what
happened?
happened was that when I was in Chile only, 2001 and 2002, so Ramana's Radio Telescope Institute is in Junnar. And we had the professor and his wife, we knew they would be like emailing saying, oh, it's terrible, the leopards are attacking people, do something about it. And I gave them my friend's contact because I had given a couple of talks at his institute after my clouded leopard survey, and they knew I was in wildlife. So they were, you know, people asking me. But then I was too busy with my daughter and stuff. Then 2003, we went to stay there. And before that, 2002, like this friend of mine, Sanjay Thakur, he came up to me in Pune and he said that, like for 6 months, I was in Pune before my husband came back because me and my daughter came back earlier for 6 months. So we were in Pune that time. And this friend of mine, Sanjay Thakur, he was like, oh, it's like, you know, people asking to do something in Junnar. Why don't you help? I said, see, I can't. But if you're willing to do the field work, I can manage it. So he said, cool, I'll do that. So then I slowly started getting interested and just over phone, I wasn't going anywhere. And then we got in touch with another friend who was interested in the GIS part, Sujoy Chowdhury. And then we wanted a veterinarian to help us as well. And so our Dr. Anirudh Belsare came on board. And then I moved to Junnar in 2003. But by then, the attacks and all had really, really decreased.
Mm-hmm.
But I was living in the conflict area.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that is how that project started. And that was really interesting because I was living in this entirely human-dominated landscape.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, places where I would not have expected the leopards, there were leopards that were being trapped.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the whole thing started. Now, fellow, it's 1 hour.
Mm.
So what do you want to do?
So we can, no, this is a good place to stop, but I'll just like to you to say a little more about this. So one is, you know, you're saying that was this like an unusual time in terms of the conflict, like just before you moved there, that was there a spurt in conflict incidents?
Right. So there were some 50 attacks, I think, each year for those 2 years on people over there from barely 3 or 4 attacks before, and a lot of deaths and a lot of strange cases where the leopards picked up the kids sleeping between the parents and, mm-hmm. you know, things like that. So it was really bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. So that was.
And when you started this work, were you affiliated with an organization or something? Was this something you just started on your own?
So it's something I just started on my own. And Sujoy had this NGO of his, because the government can't deal with an individual, no? So they want some NGO. So his NGO's letterhead we used, E-Collage it was called.
Okay.
And then after that, Ramana and me had an NGO because Ramana also started working in Northeast, no? In Arunachal.
Mm-hmm.
So we had this small NGO called Kati Trust, which is no longer functional now. I mean, it's... I joined CWS in 2007. So since then, I've been working with them and then with WCS India.
Okay.
So,
Yeah. Okay. So Vidya, this is a good time to, you know, stop the conversation for now, and then we can continue again whenever you have the time again. Right.
So I'll
stop the recording and we can just continue for a couple of minutes.
Sure.